When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Warning, this podcast contains details of a murder, which some listeners will find disturbing. Megan McAlorum was murdered on Easter Sunday, 2004. She was just 16 years old.
At the bottom of the bank before the plantation was lying the body of a young girl.
She suffered the most horrendous death, the most violent death you could possibly imagine.
The West Belfast teen had been battered to death. There's also evidence she'd been sexually assaulted.
I was pretty certain when they seen the coroner's report and what had came from that what he had said had happened had not happened. Megan had clearly been raped and sexually assaulted.
The man who murdered her, Thomas Purcell, also claimed to be 16. The courts believed him. Few others do.
He said he was 16, and this was accepted by the court. And I have seen Thomas Purcell sitting as far away from me as you are now. And do I believe at that time he was a 16-year-old boy? No, I do not. I do think that he lied about his age, and there's very good reason for doing that.
He had never shown any remorse.
He had a lengthy criminal record already, despite the fact he was a very young man.
Earlier this month, Purcell died following a road collision in Oxford.
He's the meet his maker now. He never showed any remorse, never once in all those years. There was nothing, because he had nothing in him.
Our crime correspondent, Alison Morris, has worked on this story from the beginning and knows Megan's family well.
Do you know, there's so many stories that I've covered and so many tragedies and so many murders, but I could write every detail of this story without ever having to look back in the archives or look up dates or anything, because it's so embedded in my mind.
She joins me now to tell Megan's story. Alison Morris, you're welcome to The Bell Tale. This story, which we're going to cover today, is a story that you've covered from the very beginning of it, and it is a very tragic story, and it goes back to Easter Sunday 2004. And this is the murder of Megan McAlorum, and we're speaking about it because her murderer, Thomas Purcell, has died in an accident in England. But it has brought this story back into the light. Megan was only 16 years of age.
Do you know, there's so many stories that I've covered and so many tragedies and so many murders, but I could write every detail of this story without ever having to go back and read back in the archives or look up dates or anything, because it's so embedded in my mind. I was working, she was found on Easter Monday, and I remember from that week we were, you know, flat out covering this story, covering the initial charges, the arrest, everything that went along with it, and then speaking to the family, who were just lovely from day one. And it's been one of those things that it'll just never get in mind. Also, Megan was 16. She was a pupil. She'd been a pupil at St. Genevieve School, where my niece was, who's exactly the same age as her. And, you know, my niece now is a woman with three children, and, you know, Megan's life was robbed. I remember covering her funeral. I remember it was one of those things because it was probably maybe about 5 years into, 4 or 5 years into my career as a journalist. And, you know, having to say, because I remember I was thinking, you know, you should never get emotional if you're speaking to the family of a bereaved person or crowd. If you know this isn't your grief, you know, you're just a visitor here. You know, you show respect and you stand quietly and you cover the story and you don't intrude. But I remember really having to try and hold back the tears at the funeral because it was so emotional. And there was no room in the church. The entire car park of the church was full. You know, the McAlorms were the loveliest family. They were just really well gotten, really well respected. And Megan was just a wee pet, you know, and she'd been out working that day. So it was Easter Sunday. She worked in the Glen Owen. She was serving Sunday dinners to people. And when she finished, she called up to see some of her friends in the Hunting Lodge, which is in the Stuartstown Road in West Belfast. And then from there, one of her mates was working in Chippy in the Shaws Road. So she called in to see her to get chips. And if anyone knows, she lived in Glencullen, right at the front of Glencullen. And the Shaws Road to Glencullen is literally a 5-minute walk. You know, you walk up Shaws Road onto the top of the Glen Road and there's Glencullen. Sometime along that journey, she met Thomas Purcell. I shouldn't really know Thomas Purcell, but I remember being told at the time, because my niece was a pupil of St. Genevieve's, he'd hung around outside the school and stuff when the girls were getting out, you know, and would have tried to befriend a lot of them. We don't know how she ended up in his car, but he took her to the Glenside Road, which was just on the outskirts of Belfast, just in Dunmurray there. And she suffered the most horrendous death, the most violent death you could possibly imagine. And her poor mother had to listen to all of that and see all of that in an autopsy report. She had 54 fractures to her skull, among all the other injuries that she had. And Purcell then took himself down to the Royal to try and get himself an alibi. I think he claimed he had chest pains. And while he was there, he was laughing and joking with a female doctor. She'd give a statement saying he seemed completely, you know, he didn't look like someone who just murdered someone. He was laughing, he was joking. And then he stole the doctor's mobile phone, which he then tried to sell to a relative. He went back twice to the spot where he'd left Megan. On one occasion, he dragged her body down into a ditch. And then on a second occasion, at this time, there was like a missing person appeal and the McAlorms were desperately ringing around everyone. This was really out of character. This young girl did not stay out all night. And they were ringing around all their mates, ringing her mobile phone. You know, you see our Megan, tell her to get home. Their mother was distracted about her. And then the next thing, he took two children, basically, who were like 12 and 14. He told them he'd take them and teach them how to drive and drove up this road where he'd left Megan and then said to them, oh, what's that land down there? So they had people with him, if you know what I mean, as an alibi to pretend he had stumbled across her body, and that was how she was found.
So he arranged for her body to be found?
Yeah. That's not unusual. We can see that in a lot of cases where people say, oh, I called around to see if she was okay and I found her dead. But what he did was he took two young girls with him and completely traumatised them up to the scene, said, come on, I'll take you on a driving lesson. And then they were then meant to, you know, be this with the witness he found her. But yeah, he sort of orchestrated her body being found. And that was when they discovered the serious injuries that she'd received. She'd received a terrible death, an awful death.
Her badly beaten body, 12 hours later, after going missing, her badly beaten and partially clothed body was discovered in a forest half a mile from the Glenside Road, as you said. She had not merely been battered to death. She had been at least sexually assaulted.
I'm going to say she'd been raped, but the fact is that when it came to court, we couldn't say that because the Public Prosecution Service said they couldn't prove it beyond reasonable doubt. And, you know, you want to make me angry, let's talk about things like this, because how many of cases have I covered where women have been found battered, sometimes close to death, and when they've said that they've been raped, the prosecution service or even juries have said, well, we can't prove that beyond reasonable doubt. It's your word against his. He claimed that this young girl had had consensual sex with him, and then he claimed she'd said something to him that had angered him and he had attacked her and it had all been very spur of the moment. And it was all utter nonsense. I mean, I don't want to go into too graphic details because I don't think it's fair in the family, but it was pretty certain when they seen the coroner's report and what had came from that what he had said had happened had not happened. Megan had clearly been raped and sexually assaulted. I say that now and he's dead and I don't particularly care, you know, he comes for me for, because the motive for it was always sexual. He had no other reason to take Megan to that remote spot where he took her.
Who was he?
Thomas Purcell was a member of the travelling community. The Purcells would be quite well known. They were quite a big family. They're quite a wealthy family. And close to the Glenside Road, there was a campsite where a lot of Purcells would have been at that time. He had lived a lot of his life in England over in Oxford. He had lived on a campsite over in England. And then he had came back over here to Northern Ireland, and he was living in Belfast. This is where this whole story as well takes another turn. Meghan was only 16 years of age. Purcell, who had been driving up and down the road for a couple of years, he said he was 16, and this was accepted by the court that he was 16. Because he was a member of the traveller community, there was no official record of his death. I covered not just her disappearance, her murder, her funeral. I covered the court case. We all arrived ready for a murder trial. The jury was getting sworn in before he changed his plea to guilty. And I have seen Thomas Purcell sitting as far away from me as you are now. And do I believe at that time he was a 16-year-old boy? No, I do not, by any stretch of the imagination. I do think that he lied about his age, and there's very good reason for doing that. If you are convicted of a crime that was committed while you were a juvenile, you are entitled to mitigation for the fact of your young age, and the courts have to consider that you could be rehabilitated as a child and not an adult. And so therefore he knew that he would get a much more lenient sentence as a child. Can we ever prove that? I don't know whether we can, but I mean, there was always suspicions that he had made himself younger than he was.
One would suspect that the police at the time and the public prosecution, the prosecutors would have tried to look for, but I mean, they could be, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, I don't think it's so common now, but I think, more people now, there's records of people's births for all sorts of reasons, and you need them for all sorts of reasons, and, enrolling in school and all sorts of things. But it's quite common going back then, even that it was, people who were born in the travelling community often were born at home. They're not born in hospitals, and there was no official record of their birth until a later date.
Whatever age he truly was, he had a lengthy criminal record and indeed a history of violence at the time.
He did. One of the most bizarre things, I remember then going to his sentencing, and we're sitting there as they went through the criminal record, and there was, there was violent attacks, there was driving offences, despite the fact he wasn't even old enough to drive. One of the more bizarre things were that he had been convicted of an arson attack on the home of Richard Branson. And Richard Branson had this wooden arch type thing in his garden that had been carved by Indigenous people somewhere, and he had brought it back to Oxford and put it in his garden, and Purcell had been done with the arson attack on that. I remember all the journalists and the doc, sitting in the press box sort of looking at each other and raising their eyebrows at that. But he had a lengthy criminal record already. Despite the fact he was a very young man at the time, his sentence he received what would have been considered a very low tariff, considering the amount of violence and mitigation, I don't know, and aggravating factors there were in this. Obviously, the claim that he was 16 and the guilty plea, albeit lately entered, had worked in his favour. He was sentenced to serve a minimum of 15 years. People would be shocked that you could murder someone in such a brutal way and get a minimum tariff of 15 years. And that was in 2006. And again, I remember sitting there that day that happened. I remember going to speak to Meghan's mum, Margaret, who, despite everything that she had suffered, and the grief used to be written all over her face, it really did. I mean, it just broke her. But her whole home was covered in pictures of her gorgeous children and pictures of Meghan. And no matter when you went into Margaret's home to speak to her, no matter what had happened, and no matter how annoyed she was by the system and what was happening, the first thing she'd have said, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want a cup of coffee? Do you want a biscuit? It was just the most warm, welcome and beautiful family home. And, Meghan was growing up in that lovely environment. She wasn't a troubled child. She wasn't a kid that was running wild. That's why the minute she went missing, there was, alarm bells straight away, because she was just growing up in this lovely wee home with really loving brothers and sisters.
Whilst he was sentenced to serve a minimum of 15 years in May 2006 at Belfast Crown Court, and he was eligible for parole in May 2019, he actually served just over 17 years because he was deemed unsafe to be released into the community.
Yeah, well, what does that tell you? The parole commissioners who assessed him over in England decided that he wasn't safe to be released, and they held him for another 2 years. Meghan's sister Lynn has said to me a few times, what changed in those 2 years that all of a sudden this man was fit to be, and safe to be released into the public? But yeah, he was released. I think if we go back again, he was in prison in England, and there was a reason for that. So he was originally sentenced, and as he would have been, I think he was 18, or claimed to be 18 at the time of sentence, and he went to Haybank Wood, which is a youth detention centre in the outskirts of South Belfast. And he stayed there until just before he was 21, when he applied to be relocated to Oxford, where obviously, as I said, he had family, he'd lived there for a while. He claimed that if he went to McGabbery, to the adult prison, which is what happened then, you know, you turn 21, you got transferred to the adult prison of McGabbery, that he would be under risk. I'm not sure who he thought he was under risk from, but he said he was going to be under risk, and they transferred him to Oxford. And this is a game, and I say I take these things very personally. I had a contact that was actually within that prison at the time who said to me, Thomas Purcell's been moved, he's away to England, he's not here anymore. Because I had expected him to be moved to McGabbery. And I phoned Margaret up and told her that and said, do you know they've moved him? And she didn't know. And she was very upset that they'd moved him, because at that time there was, you know, there was a lot of shifting around back and forward from prison, especially sex offenders and other people, to try and manipulate the tariff system and also to manipulate the parole system. England has a lot more open prisons where there's really relaxed regimes than we would have, to try and get themselves into an open prison and get themselves an easier life. And so it looked, you know, like he was working a bit of a move there. And she hadn't been told. I did the story and others then did the story as well. And Margaret then just sat around. She just had it, you know, when she got something on her mind, she wasn't going to let it go. And she started about campaigning. The prison service ended up, they had a meeting with her, a face-to-face meeting, and they apologised to the family. And then they created this enhanced victim information scheme, which meant anyone who was convicted of a serious crime, including murder, they're either their victim, or if their victim was deceased, their family, had to be given information as long as they signed up to this scheme about what was happening. So if they were moving prison, the families would have to be told. If there was a release date, if there was a parole application, the families would have to be told. If there was a release date, the families would be told, not the exact day, they'd be told the months. And so the reason why we've been able to track this story and follow it so closely is because Lynn, who is now the family's point of contact, the victim information scheme, they contact her in relation to this, and the only reason she receives this information is because her mother went out and campaigned for this, to say you can't just do these things on people. You know, our grief's bad enough, the system's bad enough, the sentence was lenient enough, without then moving people around and not telling people and them having to find out in all sorts of ways, or not find out at all. You know, you could be walking down the street and bump into the person who killed your child and you wouldn't have known they were released. So that was the result of that. And I think, you know, yesterday when I found that Purcell had died, and the first person I thought of was Margaret. I thought, God love her. You know, she was grief-stricken and she was broken. She died herself in 2017 and she's buried in the same grave as her wee daughter. But she campaigned tirelessly to make sure that, you know, if there was anything happening to Purcell, she would find out about it, but not just her, every other family as well.
He never showed any remorse.
None whatsoever.
He denied murdering Megan throughout and only pleaded guilt in the final hour just before his trial was due to begin. He reapplied to be released, and Megan's family were informed in March 2021 that he had been released. And at the time, they expressed concerns that he would flee to the US where he had family. But there was a whistleblower in the travelling community.
Yeah, who contacted a member of their family and said, look, we know that they're going to try and spirit him away as soon as he's released. I think there was talk of getting him, you know, a fake passport, bringing him through Canada, getting him down. He had family in New Jersey, quite a significant number of family there, and he were doing well for themselves, and there was talk that they were going to try and bring him there, get him out of the way, change his name. And then start again in America. And obviously the family's concern about that was, you know, some unwitting girl could come across this. He's only in his 30s. I mean, he was not an old man. You know, people serve a sentence for a murder and they get out of prison, and often they're old and they're ill. And, you know, regardless of what they did in the past, they're probably no longer of any threat to someone just because of their current age and position and health and everything else. This was a young, fit man. You know, he could easily have been a danger to other people, and they were really concerned about that. And I think they made so much of a fuss about that his parole conditions in England were extremely tight. They were keeping an eye on him. That's not to say as soon as he came off those parole conditions that his, you know, that he wouldn't have tried to do a runner to America. But we know he was still in Oxford at the time of his death, which was bizarrely, coincidentally, almost to the day 3 years from he was released from prison.
And he simply was struck by a car.
No, he was in a two-car collision. So the family were originally told that he had been struck by a car, they felt, somewhere in Oxford. They weren't really happy with that because, as I said, of the doubt around his age and his lack of you know, the lack of a birth certificate and things, they were like, how do you know that's him? So as of this morning, they were able to tell me, they had went back and said, look, you're going to have to give us more information. He identified him. How do you know it's definitely him? So they were then told that he had been involved in a two-car collision, that he hadn't died straight away. He'd been in hospital on life support for some time. It was on one of the main roads just outside of Oxford, and that the life support then was withdrawn sometime around the 13th or 14th of March. And that was how he died. He died in hospital then in England. The other person involved in that accident, I think, was very seriously injured as well.
Alison Marsh, crime correspondent with the Belfast Telegraph. Thank you very much.
This episode of The Bell Tell was produced by myself, Kieran Dunbar. The sound design was by Graham Davidson. The clips you heard were from UTV.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.